This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 316. I made a mistake last week and called it 215. That was 100 episodes ago. Almost 2 years worth. So yes, it is 316 on our way to 7 years. A great pile of words, perhaps signifying nothing, we will see. I am going to try to keep this to an actual 20-minute podcast today because I have to get home. I got to get some yoga done. I got to get back in because my father-in-law, they're having a birthday party for him, and that's at 6:30, and it is 10 till 5 now, so that should be just enough time. I can get home, get changed, do some exercising, get in the shower, get cleaned up, get back in the car, get back to Nana and Papa's house. It'll be fabulous. All is well. We did our big launch this week for a financial reporting website that we've been working on for some time along with other projects for my major client. And, you know, all in all, not too bad. Lots of positive response. Had a little hiccup in the user permissions. Sayang nako. There was some stuff that wasn't quite configured right, and some information had gotten lost, and yada, 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 yada. So we sent out this bulk email to, I don't know, probably 3,000 users, and about 2,600 of them didn't even have permissions. And another 400 of them couldn't even get on the site. So yay, there you go. Good job. But I got that fixed fairly quickly after the email went out, as far as everybody started writing saying, I don't have permissions. Fixed. Got that fixed. And corrected a few little navigational things through the week. Got those taken care of. And been also working on an interface for an expert system that we're putting together for them. So, you know, lots of things to do. Got lots of things done. So it's been a good week from that aspect. Everything seems to be puttering along, and people seem to be encouraged that the change has begun. You know, the march forward has begun, because they've been wanting to do this type of thing for some time. And so far we've been able to get a few things done that they've been wanting, and they've got something to show for it. So that's always good. Always good, always good, always good. And people seem to be happy, so that's always good. So anyways, that is well. The writing is puttering along. I've been able thus far to stay at 7,500 words per week, which is good. It's interesting because this book is not... Well, it's still kind of where I thought it was going to be, but there's some things about it I'm not quite settled with yet. There was a little... It was a different type of action in the second book than there was in the first book. The first book was a little shorter and it was a little faster. And the second book kind of got bloated a little bit with a character that showed up that I didn't know was going to show up. And, you know, by the time I got around that character, it added 100 pages to the book. That hasn't happened yet in this book, and I'm up around, 140 pages or so in manuscript, shooting for under 400. If I can bring it in at around, 380 or so in manuscript, then that'll land somewhere around 350. 340, somewhere in there, and that'll be plenty. So I'm shooting for 110, maybe 105,000 words, somewhere in there, and I think I just crossed 40,000, so I'm a good 40%, 45% into it. hoping that by the time I get ready to do the editing on the second book, that I will actually be up around, well, 9 times 7,500, which would be what? 67,50. So it would be 67,000, which at that point, I should be, you know, over about two-thirds done. So that would be really good, because then I would have some extra time to actually do some more editing and possibly put some more things together. So I'm encouraged. I think that's good. This is an interesting time in the whole series as a whole, because it's really 8 books of exposition is what it is. It just, you keep learning new and newer, new and new and newer things about the realm at this point. Where the next set of books, you keep learning more and more and more and more about the night. And then the last set of books is where the clash really starts coming together. And you learn, keep learning about the night, but then there's more stuff to learn about the realm turning. And, you know, so it's kind of like there's a lot of exposition in this stuff, and it's figuring out ways to make that exposition interesting. And it's really a kind of a fascinating process, because I don't know all the exposition. I kind of have an idea where things are and what the pieces are, but then as you start to look closer at it, there's all these little aspects to it that aren't immediately apparent. And there's little ways to twist those aspects and turn them into something that at least interests me, and I hope interests my beta readers as well. So it's fun. It's fun. It's going to be interesting to see how this book all turns out. I think I know where we're ending, but we'll wait and see. We will wait and see. It's been a good week as far as chatting with friends. Had some nice conversations with friends this week, and had some breakfast once, I think, maybe. I can't remember. Anyways, it's always good to get together with friends and share and talk about what's going on in their lives and talking about what's going on in my life. And so it's good. Life is good. I should get started more quickly with the topic at hand, because this is only going to be 20 minutes for sure, because I'm going to have to cut loose and go do some yoga. The whole yoga thing is working out pretty well. It's going to be interesting to see where this leads. I'm now in the packet that you get. With this, there are 3 different tracks that you can do. And with those 3 different tracks, it's beginner, medium, and advanced. And I'm actually working at the end of the last track now. So I'm just doing the workouts that you would normally do on week 13 of the most advanced, and they're all 13 weeks. I still can't do everything in every track, and or in every workout. Certainly, I can't do everything, but, you know, I can do quite a bit of it, so that's good. Does feel like I'm getting stronger. Does feel like my back is getting stronger and better. I did a demo today for the new reporting system with the last 3 people that we hadn't had a chance to do a demo for. In the financial services department, and for over an hour I sat reclined against the top of a desk while I talked. In the past, you know, my back would have been really sore after doing that for an hour, and, you know, I stood up once or twice for a little bit, but aside from that I was fine, so, which is really good. We like progress. You know, we like solutions. Good. So anyways, so that's good. This week, I came across a couple of weeks ago a TED Talk. I don't know how old it was, but I've missed so many TED Talks that I'm actually going back through the YouTube stuff. And I'm not using the actual TED application from my smartphone because as soon as I plug in a headphone, it blows up. It's like, what? So, there you go. Don't understand that. Maybe it's an anti-copying piracy thing. I don't know. But I noticed this TED Talk called So There's No Free Will, Now What? I thought, okay. Because I'm always kind of on a lookout for things like this. So we've proven that God doesn't exist. Oh, really? It is impossible to prove a negative. Because you don't have all knowledge and all experience. So you can't say, well, this has never happened. Well, I mean, what? Well, God doesn't exist. Okay, just because you haven't found him, how big are you? Maybe he's not around at the moment. You know, there's all kinds of things. So this guy, and I'm not really sure what his motivation was, I will tell you frankly. So I don't know if he was like a closet religious person that was trying to convince people in a sort of roundabout, backhanded way that they need to get more spiritual in their lives. I don't know, but he went through his little spiel, and I went, what? What? So this was basically his spiel. He said that, you know, one of the great challenges we have, his name was Robert Speth. Robert S-P-E-T-H. His big challenge is being ourselves while knowing there is no free will. Now, I don't know how he defines free will, but I define free will as having the ability to be presented with a host of incoming data, being able to recognize patterns that you have engaged in the past, being able to analyze that and determine that there might be better patterns for you to enable in the future, and simply choosing. Not always doing right, what you think is right, but over time, actually changing the patterns that would have existed had you not made an effort. So for me, free will is really about the ability that we have to make an effort to choose differently than we would choose if we just allowed ourselves to be shoved into something by our instincts and our emotions and our flesh. Free will, to use my terminology, is really about the option to fight against the lure of the flesh, to fight against the temptations of the flesh, and to become more than we would be if we simply let the flesh have its way. So that, for me, is really the crux of free will. It is in this war that we are engaged in between flesh and spirit that we have the ability to choose spirit. That we are not necessarily condemned always to choose flesh. So he guys started going through like a whole list of things. He said, for instance, biologists tell us that we are animals, that we're like biological robots. You know, and we have genes, and the genes said a bunch of stuff about us, and the epigenetic changes that are happening in the epigenetics in our parents right before we're born. You know, there's all kinds of things that can impact mental functioning. We have all these autonomic functions. Our heart beat by themselves, or, you know, we breathe by ourselves. We got all these cells that are just doing stuff, and we don't have any mental control over it. They're just doing stuff. And that shows that we're just robots. And he talks about, and we think our mind is different, but it really isn't, you know, that the brain is just the physiological substrate. The neurons work as the same as all the other cells in our bodies. They just do what they do. So therefore, there is no free will. You don't really have any determination. You're just going to do whatever you're going to do already. It's already been decided. And theoretically, if you knew as much as you could know about a person, you could predict their behavior all the way down to the second or the millisecond. But see, to do that, you'd have to know every input, even if it was possible. And still, I think that we have the ability to choose. This is one of the things that I talk with my buddies about. That we really have a 100 millisecond window, in many cases, to make the choice. It's a tenth of a second. When the flesh tries to push you in a certain direction, you've got a tenth of a second where you can say no. And for me, that tenth of a second window is free will. And of course, this guy is going on and on about how there is, you know, no free will. And how that, well, this even, you know, we do these experiments where we electrify the brain with a certain charge in a certain spot, and it changes how people choose. Unconsciously, they're not even aware of it. It just changes how they choose. And fMRI can predict a person's decisions with 100%, 80% accuracy, not 100%, 80% accuracy, before the person even knows what decision they're going to make. Okay, well, okay. So, yeah. So, there must be no free will. Oh, what? And this question of whether or not there is free will, however you want to define that, is fascinating to me, because whenever people are railing at stuff where there doesn't seem to be an instantaneous connection for me, but where there is something that is inferred, but there is still a lot we don't know about it, and yet people seem to be on a campaign like there is no God. Okay, because there's so much we don't know, but scientists typically don't say that. Well, of course there is no God. We haven't seen any evidence, of course. Okay, well, you haven't seen everything. Doesn't matter, there's no God. Why do people take that route? It's because they're trying to prove something to themselves. And in the case of there is no God, I think what they're trying to prove is that they are not responsible to anything else, any other entity. And in the case of there is no free will, I think what's happening is people are trying to prove that even if they are responsible to another entity, that entity can in no way hold them responsible for their behavior, because, or anyone else can hold them responsible for their behavior, because after all, there is no free will. It's just, I just inherited this lot, and my experience has made me this way, and so I just have to keep doing this. Well, that seems to me to be a bit of a cop-out. So what was interesting to me is that after, you know, he went through this whole thing about there is no free will, then he said, okay, and what is the arguments about against saying there is no free will? Well, you know, can we hold criminals accountable? Well, yes, we can hold them accountable, because the laws don't depend on what you've been born with. It's just you're accountable for your actions. So we are going to hold you accountable. Okay, so then I think, well, if you're trying to prove there's no free will so that no one can hold you accountable, I think you've kind of defeated the purpose to say, no, we are going to hold people accountable. So it doesn't really matter whether there's free will or not. The result is the same. You are going to be held accountable for your actions. So if we're going to send people to jail simply because they grew up in bad environments or they happen to have a genetic construct that causes them to be more violent than others, or they've had an environment that caused them to be more violent, and then what type of a society are we? I'm getting my mail. What type of a society are we if we don't recognize that people have been quote-unquote forced into this because they didn't have any free will, but yet this guy says, well, that's what we do. You know, it doesn't really matter. Doesn't matter if there's no free will, we're still going to hold people accountable. This is when I started thinking, wait a minute. And then he really went off the deep end, as far as I was concerned. I mean, I went, what? So then he says that the answer to this, he said, either you can say there's no free will and live this terrible life, but the real answer to this was that you just depart from reality. You just ignore the matter that there is no free will and behave as if you do have free will. Wait a minute. Backing into my garage. One moment. So I'm thinking, oh, okay. So you supposedly have proved something that there obviously is observational phenomenon that doesn't really fit with what you've proven. And your solution is, well, let's just ignore the fact that we've proven this and live like we haven't. And he said, and I did agree with this. He said, you know, just because we are theoretically predictable doesn't mean that we are practically able to predict. Okay, so in other words, what you're saying is, yeah, everything may be determined, but it's so complex and there's so many inputs that at the end of the day, we are functionally beings who have something that resembles free will. And he actually said this. He said, you know, that the brain simulates free will. That whatever reality comes into conflict with our perceptions, though, that perceptions always win. So the brain is really just simulating free will, but it simulates it so well that it makes us feel like we have free will, so we believe we have free will. It's like, wait, okay, we are really chasing our tail here, because what difference does it make whether we actually have free will or we don't have free will if we're going to pretend that we do, act like we do, and truly believe that we do? So what difference does it make? Why do we have to get out our little soapbox and say, well, there's no free will? Okay, because in practical terms, it's the way it works out. And I have seen many people, good people, that I am happy to say that I believe that if I had not come into their lives, that their lives would have gone down a different track. But the fact that we've chatted and grown together and discussed matters has impacted their lives. What that tells me is that there is some mechanism in there where a person can choose different paths. Now, maybe you could say, well, since you came into their life, there was no chance. They didn't have any chance of not agreeing with you. And what? You know, I don't think I'm that persuasive. Anyways, so then this guy goes on to say, well, that's the reason that I like religion, you know, because the religion gives us this illusion that we have free will and that we're okay. And that's much more comfortable to live in that than in this idea. I've got ants all over my mail, so I'm just knocking them off. To live within this idea that there's no free will. So his analogy was, well, we're passengers on this train. We can't change anything. So we should just enjoy the ride and provide improvement in other people's lives. And then he concluded with, you know, I asked scientists, what is happiness? And they all kind of looked at me funny, like, what are you talking about? What do you mean, what is happiness? And then I went out on a hillside and I saw a Hungarian family and Hungarian families and the husbands were there and the wives were there and the children was there and they had beer. And that's kind of the way he ended. That apparently is happiness. You know, it's ineffable. Well, yeah, I kind of agree with that. It's really hard to pin down. Actually, it's not that hard. You listen to your spirit and not your flesh, and you'll get to happiness. You'll get to joy. Let's put it that way. You'll get to joy. I'm very amused, I guess, at people who chase their tail, who set out to prove something that's supposedly so important for them to prove. And then when they get to the end of it, they realize they don't really like what they proved. And so then they back away from it. You know, it kind of reminds me of Kierkegaard with his leap of faith, if I know the story correctly, that what he had there was he worked himself all the way down to the point that there was nothing and it was all nihilism. And then he said, but you can't really live like that. So just take a leap of faith. Pretend like it's all out there. Oh, you know, I would just as soon embrace a belief that says there's more out there because of all the passive positive benefits it gets me And if there's nothing, there's nothing. That's fine. But I won't know that after I'm dead if there's nothing. But if there's something, then I get to enjoy this life now as if there's something. And I get to enjoy the next life as if there's something. This is Phil Ferrand. And I got to go do some yoga because I have made it home.